And welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Before we start our interview today, I wanted to let you know Psych Rock Kirtan, my project with Lindsay Sanwald, aka Iggy Dean, is now available as a recording on Bandcamp, which means you can download it, play it, listen to it, meditate to it. It's a blast. We had a great time putting it together, and now you can enjoy it too. So check it out, bandcamp.com. There's a link in the show notes, so you can click and get right there. Enjoy. Jane Stellbaum is a yoga teacher and teacher trainer in the Washington, D.C. metro area and a certified brain longevity specialist through the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation's Brain Longevity Therapy Training. She founded Sarasvati in 2012 in honor of her mother Sarah, whom she lost to Alzheimer's. The company's mission is to prevent memory-related diseases like Alzheimer's and help those already impacted to maintain a quality of life as long as possible. She does this through workshops, caregiving training sessions, speaking engagements, and private sessions, in which she shares how the tools of yoga, breath, meditation, and the physical practice can positively impact memory and cognitive function. Jane has been a featured speaker at conferences by the Smithsonian Associates, Aging Life Care Association, Alzheimer's Foundation of America, and taught at many yoga studios, senior living communities, and corporate offices throughout the East Coast. I was a lead trainer in Jane's teacher training, and it's delightful for me to get a chance to catch up with her and see what she's been up to. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Peter.
So good to see you.
It's great to see you, too. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, and we're on Skype, so I can literally see you. Yeah, everyone else can just hear us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you're living where now?
I live in North Potomac, Maryland, right outside of D.C., about 30, 40 miles north of D.C.
Cool. And when we were at ISHTA first creating the current iteration of the ISHTA studio, we started off with a teacher training that came into your neighborhood.
You did. I know. Much to my good fortune.
Yeah. So we had you in the very first of the ISHTA teacher trainings.
I think I was the second.
Okay.
I think I was the second. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, and I did both the 200 and the 300 hour through ISHTA.
And so you got to work with me and Wendy and Alan and Sarah and also April. Pucciata,
yeah,
right?
I didn't have the pleasure of working with Wendy. Okay. She wasn't in that session. But yes, you and Sarah and Alan and April.
Yeah.
A little bit of Mona.
Cool. Yeah. And now you're teaching, and you're also you also took your yoga and personal interest to blend into an organization.
Yes.
Yeah.
They did.
Tell us a little about the organization.
So I started a company called Sarasvati. We can talk about the name and all that good stuff. But basically what it's about is how yoga and a yogic lifestyle can relate to brain health good memory, and really with a mission towards preventing memory-related diseases like Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So while I was going through training, I lost my mother to Alzheimer's, and so that this became kind of a passion project for me.
Yeah.
And I really began to seek out how yoga can impact, how yoga can impact memory and cognitive function.
Cool.
So this is my way of sharing that with the world.
Fantastic. Your mother passed away when? That was 2000.
About 8 years ago, mm-hmm. I guess, like 2010. Yeah.
And your idea about the project, did it come about while you were working with her in those final years or afterwards?
It did. I think she was still here when it began to formulate. And I think she passed away in the middle of the 300-hour training. So, mm-hmm. And then in that 300-hour training, we had to do a research paper,
right.
Or project, right? And
right.
So I chose to do mine about yoga and brain health, and used a lot of the tools that I used with her through her care. Just things that I learned through our training, our breathing techniques and our meditations. And I brought that into these workshops that I now go and share. And then I learned more as I explored. You know, I reached out, I did a lot of research, and I reached out to a number of people. For instance, Dr. Satbir Khalsa from Harvard, who does a lot with yoga, a lot of research around yoga and stress. And I reached out to him, and he was kind enough to talk to me and share some of what he was doing. And then he pointed me to the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation there in Tucson, Arizona. And they were doing some fabulous research around a specific meditation called the Kirtan Kriya, and how that impacts cognitive function. And they were funding research through UCLA and University of Pennsylvania, excuse me. And I used that research in my workshops. That sort of became the cornerstone of what I share in my workshops.
In terms of the actual practice or the research as a, you know, like a sales tool or both?
I share the actual practice. So mm-hmm. I will teach the Kirtan Kriya in my workshops. And so my workshops are very interactive and experiential. So we're breathing together, we're meditating together, but I share the research behind what I'm teaching. So
right.
The more evidence we can show that this is really effective, you know, the more people will appreciate it and take it on as part of their own lives.
Right.
So going back to your original question, some of what I use were tools that I learned through our ISHTA training and that I was using with my mother along the way. And then things that I learned as I began to explore even more.
A specific niche. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You don't have a science background, as I recall, but you have a marketing background, right? You've run a company doing that. And
right.
Are you
yeah.
still doing that?
Well, I'm consulting, so I'm self-employed in that way. So yeah, I wear a lot of hats these days.
Yeah.
But I grew up in the ad agency business, basically. And so when I was going through the training and you and I met, I was the president of an ad agency in the Baltimore, Washington region, a smaller agency. Mm-hmm. And so that was my career for,
right.
you know, 20, 30 years. And then in 2012, I left the agency and I started consulting so that I could spend more time developing Sarasvati and I could explore that a little bit. And so now I balance both. You know, I still love the marketing side. I still get a lot of pleasure out of doing that. But I'm really trying to grow and develop Sarasvati and take it out more and see where that goes. And that's really my passion project, I guess.
That's great. And you know, something that I say to people who are taking teacher trainings and ask that inevitable question, how do I make a living doing this? Very often it's that you continue to do something else
right.
that earns money, that doesn't drain you, that you feel right. also passionate about, and then the two become a sort of a pairing in your right. life. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I distinctly remember sitting with you at one of those picnic tables outside of the studio.
Yeah.
And a conversation about how I could ever find the time to teach, right? Even to teach a class. I remember you telling me how Wendy did that. She found that
right.
balance.
Right.
And I did. I took on one class. And now I teach like 4 or 5 classes a week.
Wow.
And I teach a bunch of workshops separate from Sarasvati Day, but I'm also doing Sarasvati Day. And I'm able to do that because I left the agency world. And
right.
so I pick and choose how much time I spend on any one effort. And there are certain days where I'm juggling a lot of different things. And then there are certain days where I'm just here, you know, on one project. So it's interesting.
And do you find that the having the yoga practice helps you do that juggling?
Oh,
in other
absolutely.
Words, mentally and yeah, physically.
Oh yeah, I couldn't survive without it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it without it. I need the practice on my own. I need to get to class. I have a home practice. If I go a few days without it, I feel the difference.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's crucial to my survival.
Yes. That's great. And yeah. are you teaching at Thrive in Rockville? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. It's my community. I've really never left. And I started with one class a week, and now I teach a hatha all levels class. I teach yoga basics to beginners in 8-week sessions, getting more people in,
yeah,
bringing people into the fold. And I teach a variety of workshops, mostly around like healthy backs. And I do one for women 50 plus.
Oh, how
just
great.
Just because we all have our own thing.
Yeah.
And then I teach the Sarasvati content within the Thrive teacher training curriculum.
Oh, cool.
So it's part of the curriculum there. And often we'll open that up to the general public too.
Nice.
We have to talk about Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we can talk about Brooklyn right now. So are you from Brooklyn?
No, I'm from Long Island.
Okay.
I grew up on Long Island in East Meadow.
Okay.
And but then I came here to go to the University of Maryland.
Okay.
And I never went back. But
yeah.
then I met Rob, and Rob lived in Brooklyn.
Okay.
I never knew Brooklyn really. it was Long Island, and I had some family in Queens, and that was it.
Right.
And I spent time in the city. But when I met Rob and I started having a long distance relationship, I fell in love with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Absolutely with it. So I'm the one who talks about like maybe we should go move up to Brooklyn. Rob's a little been there, done that. So I'm always jealous, you know, when I'm watching you and I have some other friends. Oh dear, I'm gonna give her a treat.
Sure.
Can
sure.
I give a goat for a treat, and that might get her out of my hair for a little bit.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah, Brooklyn has been such a hotbed of creative juice, and there's a lot of yoga here now, and there's with it the whole gentrification issue that's so rampant in cities around the country.
Right.
It's making it
right.
really hard for people who don't have major incomes to stay. And,
yeah.
So I'm not sure how it's all going to play out in the long run. It
right.
seems to me we're driving toward a whole economy that's not built around people, and I don't know what that means.
I know. I know. We have the same thing here in DC. It's amazing to watch the transformation of some of the neighborhoods, and it's all really exciting. But yeah, it pushes people out, and it's an issue. You know? My brother-in-law still lives in Windsor Terrace, so we get up there a few times a year, and always love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to pop over to Ishta sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is Ishta in, is there an, a Brooklyn Ishta?
There is not. There's,
right,
we have only one studio happening right now in Union Square on 11th Street. Mm-hmm. And then there are Ishta teachers at various places here and there.
Right.
Since there couldn't possibly be enough classes at the one Ishta Center for all of the teachers who teach Ishta yoga. So if we can maybe talk a little bit more about the teaching that you're doing at Thrive, that would be interesting, I think, because you're teaching both new students, people who are new to yoga, as well as this all levels kind of class. And again, it's another thing that so many teacher trainees are so curious about. How do you do that? So what's been your approach to that?
Well, you know, time is everything and experience is everything. So, you know, you know, there's no question that when you start out, there's a lot of trepidation and fear and can I do this and will people respond to me and what if I mess up my lefts and my rights is, you know, and you know, over time you just get more comfortable with that and you realize it's totally okay to mess up your lefts and your rights, you know, and we all do it. Even the best teachers do it. And, you learn that, I don't know, I watch people's faces, right? You know, sometimes I'm teaching a class and I see how internal people are and how focused they are. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, it's like they seem internal, but are they too intense? You know, there's this balance, but then the class ends and all of a sudden they're smiling and they're bright and they're like, and you think, okay, I think I touched them. Like, I think I gave them a good experience and that, and the more you start to see that happen, I guess the more confidence you start to have in your own teaching and your own experience up there. And so it's funny because, you know, if you think back, you know, a lot of the, you know, a whole bunch of us, right? Like Jess Apo, Felicia and Julie, we're all from that Ishta training with Gonma and we're all there and we're all like the senior teachers now.
Yeah. So great.
It's, you know, it's kind of interesting and we're all in the teaching and the teacher training and, you know, it's just, it's time and experience. And I really do love teaching beginners because I love when they just start to get it. And I love when people who walk in the class with their shoulders up to their ears, 8 weeks later, you know, you notice that there's now a little space, a little melting, you know, and it's cool. And then you start seeing them infiltrate the other classes and you're like, okay, I've done my job.
Right. They ask that question. Do you think I could do a intermediate class?
Right.
Am I good enough for that?
Right. I know.
And you kind of coach them along.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if that answered that question, but you know, I find, you know, a lot of pleasure in teaching both beginners and teaching all levels, and I've developed a real love for teaching seniors, and that came from what I started to do with Sarasvati, because I started to bring Sarasvati workshops to a lot of senior living communities, and that really is the heart of Sarasvati at this point. So, Shay girl, sit down, sit, relax. You gotta chill. Okay.
So breathe in, breathe out.
Breathe in, right. Right. Sit down. So, you know, I brought that into all these senior living communities and began to get a lot of exposure to that audience. So then I realized, all right, I'm spending a lot of time here in this with this audience and clientele. So I felt like I needed more training. So I went to Duke's Integrative Yoga for Seniors training. It's an 8-week immersion, days at Duke University through their integrative health department. And it's run by two fabulous women who are yogis, and Carol Krukoff, who used to be a journalist at the Washington Post. Now she does a lot of health writing for them. But anyway, they run a really outstanding program. And it's almost like taking a crash course in medical school. Wow. Because they bring in specialists from the health department, you know, from the medical school. And so a cardiologist comes in, and a neurologist, and a specialist on, you know, osteoporosis. And they really give you, okay, this is how these conditions manifest. This is what you're going to see in your classes. And then you learn about teaching to those conditions. So, so that was a really worthwhile training for me.
If there was a general kind of overarching type of a notion of the perspective when you're teaching seniors versus teaching people who are more in their youth or more in their middle age, what would you say is the difference?
I think you really have to respect their life experience and respect whatever conditions they're walking in with, because they're walking in with issues. And so you just can't teach it the same way. You have to teach it. You have to create a very safe environment and be respectful of what may be going on in their bodies. I find it a real honor to teach seniors. I find that I learn from them a lot. And a lot of them they're active seniors, and a lot of them are retired and traveling, and you know, some of them are a little more frail than others, but I find that I learn a lot from them. But I just try to teach them in a very, very safe way, and not, I don't take anything for granted, you know, mm-hmm. that they're all healthy and shiny, and you know, they're not. Right. They've lived life.
A trainee brought up the question the other day about when you have a group that's mixed in class, and somebody is, you know, less capable than some other students. She said, I know teachers who will say, I always teach to the sort of the what everybody can do, including that person who has the least capabilities. And I said that I tend to develop more of a options-based class, if it's a class, right? So it's like, you could do this or you could do this, and tell them why they might choose one or the other. Do you find that in your seniors' classes?
I do. I mean, I tend to be probably a little bit more conservative, a little bit more safe than in my regular classes, but I'll still offer options. And I'll say, you know, if you've got, you know, these kind of issues going on in your lower back, take this up. This option might be better for you. I mean, I do a lot of ifs. If you've got this, do this. If you've got this, do this. You know, if you're not forward bending for whatever reason, you know, stay in this halfway position, you know, and get this benefit.
That's a great way to describe it too, because it's like very often as people are coming into a knowledge of this idea of customizing practice, the language that comes out of their mouth is whatever feels good to you, which is not necessarily the right criteria. So you're saying, if you've got this, is a beautiful way to preface the choice with why should I do this choice?
Yeah. Right. And I mean, you know, and that, I think that's something that I learned from you and through the ISHTA training is that, you know, I do. I mean, I think that, you know, just learning that, it's that whole individual concept from ISHTA, right? That everybody's got to have that practice, you know, the practice for their own bodies.
Right.
That notion of adapting poses to their body and their needs.
Right. Yeah. And then can you talk a little bit more specifically about your program without giving away your workshop, what the practices that you do at Saraswati? And is it a mix of asana and breathing and meditation, or are you focused more primarily on one?
No, it's everything. It's it includes breath work, it includes meditation, includes asana, and it really depends on the audience too. So if I'm teaching it at yoga studios or wellness centers, and it's a more well-rounded or baby boomer kind of audience, I get a lot of baby boomers, it will include a pretty full practice, you know, up and down on the mats and a variety of poses. And if I'm teaching in senior living communities, very often they're in chairs and it's a more discussion lecture kind of setup, but I will have them move a little bit and stretch and maybe stand and experience standing poses and how grounding they are, and balance poses, however they might be able to, because that's all about, you know, mental focus and concentration. Right. So what I try to do is teach, I'll talk a lot about how we live in a world of stress and the impact that stress has on our bodies and our brains, and how there is research that shows now, there's plenty of research that shows now how yoga can help relieve stress and calm our minds. And so I take them through a variety of breathing techniques and how they can have different impacts on the body and the mind. So breath to relax, or breath to energize, or breath to give us more oxygen, breath to focus, you know, all our different breathing techniques have different impacts. And so I try to show how that works in their own bodies. I get them to experience that. We talk about how they can use it, at what part of the day they can use it. And then I'll take them through a physical practice that does the same thing, right? I mean, standing poses, or even sitting in your chair when you have both feet on the floor, have some energetic quality, you know, forward bends versus back bends, the benefit of balance poses, how to find balance poses to your edge, all of that. And then I get into the Kirtan Kriya, and I talk about the research that's been done around that, and I teach it, and we do it for 12 minutes usually. Sometimes I'll do a half version of it, but usually I try to go the full 12 with the group and even with my seniors. And then, you know, there's just a lot of discussion about how this all works in our daily lives. So I try to let people walk out of the room with practical tools that they can use.
Afterwards without you being there.
Right. So that they can, you know, things that will help, you know, calm them down or give them more energy or help them focus or help them sleep. Sleep is a huge relationship between sleep and memory. So all these risk factors that we have for developing either general brain fog or more serious issues like Alzheimer's, you can start making some choices in your life and start taking some actions in your life to try to plow through that and prevent that.
Wow.
So that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And so when you've been doing these workshops in various places, is it usually a one-off type of a workshop, or is it a thing where you come back from time to time and you're like on the schedule at the place, or what?
Usually it's a one-off, and often I'll be invited back. So I might come back a year later to repeat it.
Please sponsor me on patreon.com. Patreon is a crowdfunding method of supporting Peter's podcast at any level that you like to make it possible for me to do the podcast, not have commercials, and keep on going, bringing you lots of interesting talks like the one I'm having with Jane. You can support the podcast for any level that makes sense to you, And at two of the levels, I give you access to me, one via email, the other via a video conference. So check it out, patreon.com/peterspodcast. Here's the rest of our interview.
I've been trying to take it more into the corporate world. Mm-hmm. So sometimes then I try to get them to do a series of three so that they can start to maybe establish some habits and practice some things, and we can talk about it. And that has a little different focus to it. That's more about the business world and clear and creative thinking, and that has a little different bent. The Alzheimer's piece is less associated with that, but
right, because the research I've been thinking so much about the Alzheimer's component, but you're talking about brain health, period. And right. So it applies regardless of age or condition. That's awesome.
Right. It does. I mean, there's no, mostly what I do is all in that Alzheimer's prevention vein, but trying to blend my corporate experience, my corporate world and my yoga world, and trying to infiltrate the corporate market a little bit.
Yeah. Having done a bit of that myself, having worn different kinds of business hats through the course of my long life, being a baby boomer myself, I've always found that having that experience makes it so easy to speak with people from all these different walks of life, that right. you speak their language, and so right. you're a more trusted source.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I know, having grown up in the ad agency world, as you have too, right?
Yeah, I had some experience in graphic design.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's such a highly stressed environment, you know, long hours and demanding clients and working with eccentric creative people all the time, you know. it's a very stressful lifestyle. And so I know what those demands are like. And I know what it's like to be pulled in a million different directions and to try to focus on the big picture, but be pulled into the nitty gritty of everyday work life. And so I try to teach people how to balance that a little bit in their work. But, you know, what they do in their work life is going to affect their personal lives and hopefully make them healthier human beings. So.
Right. So you raise an interesting point. You know, here in New York, we're in the commerce center of the world, and in DC you're certainly in this government center of the world where so many people are in policy and you know, life or death decisions on a global scale. And so I found both places to be so much focused on work and valuing yourself as what you do. Everyone's first question is, what do you do? Where do you work? And that becomes this defining thing.
Right.
And since I've sort of moved more exclusively into the yoga realm myself, I'm constantly reading and pondering, you know, doing less, doing more of what brings you joy, doing, you know, allowing the universe to unfold in front of you rather than having your goal sheet and all of that kind of stuff. You know, I'd be curious to know what your perspective is on that from down in the government land.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I guess I'm not in the political circle so much myself, except that, I mean, I'm, as you know, I'm politically, you know, I'm an activist.
Yeah.
So,
but your students must be.
But my students, it's true. I mean, there's no question that if you choose to live in this area, like if you choose to live in the New York metro area, you're bombarded, you know, you're surrounded by all of this energy and activity that, you know, all that vritti that we call it, right? All that stimulus. And it's, yeah, you have to really like work harder to get people to plow through that, you know, and to kind of get back to what else is out there. You know, I just came back from South Africa, and a slight tangent. it was such an amazing experience because we did two safaris, and you're out there in your Land Rover with your guide and your tracker and a few people, and you're traveling through the bush, and all you can see in every direction is like Mother Earth.
Yeah.
is nature to the horizon line. There's the sky and there's nature everywhere around you, and all you hear are the sounds of nature. All you see are the sounds. Occasionally you'll encounter the animals in their natural environment. And I was just struck by, wow, there's so much space here. There's so much space, and there's so little noise, and everything sounds better and tastes better and smells better. And there's not all this clutter and stuff and stimulus, you know. And then, you know, I get home and I'm on Rockville Pike, you know, driving to Thrive Yoga, and I'm like, look, what have we done to the world? You know, what have we done to the world? And so, again, I don't know if I'm getting at the question, but how do you get from, you know, New York City or Washington, D.C. to the African bush? You know, like, there's something in the middle, and we have to find that place so that we're not just so totally bombarded by all that stimuli.
Yeah.
And that's what yoga brings to the table. It's a way to cut through all of that and clear some of that space. Maybe you won't get all the way to the bush, but you find some peace and sanity in the middle.
Well, I think that's exactly right. You know, the karma, your karma is going to put you somewhere, and you're working within that space, and maybe you'll have the good fortune to go and see something else, you know, see what mm-hmm. else there could be. But the yoga provides this opportunity to stop that look outward for what's going to make it better.
Right.
And it provides the power within you. It lets you see that you have that power within you to create difference right there. And it's what's beautiful about something like the trip you took is that it's an inspiration, right? It's a reminder mm-hmm. that there can be something different, because we get so caught up in what's in front of our five senses.
Right.
And it makes it super enticing to just stay there.
Yeah.
You know? And so that, like, I sometimes I roll my eyes when I see like yet another Rumi quote on Instagram or something, because it's like, okay. And in fact, when we went on retreat this summer, I had everyone do an exercise where they came up with their own quotes that, you know, this inside of ourselves. We don't need to be always looking outward for the stuff. We just need to take the time to practice, and then we will be the source of that. You know, but it is when you're down or when you're caught up in it, having these inspirational things available is useful for pushing you back into your clear perspective.
Right. So, and one of the things that, you know, so how do you take that? Yeah, no one's going to take a 17-hour flight to Africa, right? But how do you take that into your daily lives? And so, like, these little examples, like I talk about in my workshop sometimes, when I worked at the ad agency, the last ad agency, there was this long hallway to get to the restrooms. And so I used to have this thing that when I opened the door to our office and I was walking to the restroom, I would breathe. Like, I would just focus on my breath in that long walk to the restroom. And so that would be sometime during the day where, if I haven't so far, I could just come back to my breath. Yeah. And I said that in one of my workshops at a senior community. And this woman said to me, yeah, I do that in my elevator. She said, when I get in my elevator and I press the button to the 10th floor, I breathe. And then I do it when I come down too. And so I was like, yeah, so that's it. Like, how do you find these moments in your day when you can just shut it down for a minute and just, you know, come back?
Yeah.
And that's what I, you know, try to impart when I, you know, say practical tools. It's like, how can I? Okay,
right.
So 18 minutes of meditation is one way, but sometimes a 3-minute walk to the bathroom is another way.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can be mindful, it's stepping and creating the distinction for yourself that there's what's out there, and then there's this consciousness that's aware of it. So
right.
whenever you take the time to breathe, whenever you can remember to take the time to breathe, you're remembering who you are and that
right.
you have this power. You know, I got to see Thich Nhat Hanh at the National Cathedral once, and he described some of the things they did at the place in outside of Paris, I forget what it's called, where he had the ashram. And, you know, he said, when the telephone rings, no one answers the telephone. They use that ring as a reminder to focus, to catch a breath, to notice
right.
where they are, and then to answer the phone. You know,
right.
anything that happened, you paused and you
right.
realized this is a thing that I am now doing, and I am
right.
me, you know?
Right.
So,
right. It's a trigger. You know, we sometimes think of triggers as bad things, but what are those positive triggers, you know,
yeah.
that remind us to come back?
Yeah. yeah. And so I can plug Wendy's new book. It's Pratipaksha Bhavanam, which in the Yoga Sutras is described as when something isn't serving you, when some mental pattern isn't serving you, you can try to insert the opposite.
Yeah.
The better pattern in the meantime while
right.
you're aiming to get to the meditation place. So
right, right.
Yeah.
I just ordered that book, by the way. But,
oh,
so.
Awesome. Yeah,
we
have a handful of them here from the publisher as pre-author copies. And
yeah,
it looks
that's
good.
Exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. So what's on your agenda for the coming months in terms of teaching and Sarasvati?
I have a couple of interesting opportunities, so I'm excited about. I'm doing a program with the Smithsonian, and the Smithsonian's
cool.
done a couple of yoga therapy related conferences. A few years back, they did. If you remember, they had that the show at the Smithsonian. I can't remember the title of it, but it was all about the history of yoga.
Yes,
and around
I saw
it, they
that.
Did they did a whole conference, a yoga lifestyle conference around it, and they've done that a couple of times. And the woman who organizes and runs that is a woman, Linda Lang, and she's fabulous. And so she's running another one in March. And it's a 1 or 2 day Smithsonian a program for Smithsonian associates, and it's all going to be about, you know, lifestyle yoga as lifestyle medicine. So I'm going to be on a panel there, and
great
work. So I'm excited about that. And then I've been working on. I was invited to do a weekend format at Yogaville, but not till next November. But I've been working on that. That like curriculum for a weekend format of Sarasvati Day, and so I'm really, really excited about that. And other than that, I'll bring it, you know, I'll continue to bring it. I always say I'll go wherever I'm invited.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, circulate around and find myself at different. I have a few sessions scheduled at Thrive as part of their teacher trainings, and then I'll be in and out of some senior living communities. And that's it. I mean, I'm just trying to bring it out as, you know, to share it. It's important. And I did something really cool a couple, right before I went away in early October, and I became a certified brain longevity specialist.
Wow.
So the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation put together a training program. So more people would be educated about the research behind lifestyle choices and Alzheimer's prevention, because it really the whole idea of Alzheimer's prevention is fairly new. It, you know, it's always been about the cure and, you know, finding that magic bullet, and we're not getting very far. And what they're learning in science is that you know, all diseases like Alzheimer's manifest decades earlier than when they actually start presenting themselves. So it really is all about getting in early and trying to prevent the disease. So the conversation around prevention has gotten much more exciting and much bigger and much louder. And this foundation has been talking about it for years and years. So people are finally paying attention to them. And so they are now trying to certify people to have the knowledge and the experience around the research behind lifestyle choices, and they promote their four pillars of Alzheimer's prevention. And yoga and meditation is a big part of that, because one of the pillars is stress management. So what the content for Sarasvati just got a whole lot more robust because of going through that training and learning not only the yoga and meditation pieces, but about diet and about physical and mental exercise, and about stress management, and about what they call spiritual fitness, but which you would think rings very true towards the eight limbs of yoga, because a lot of the concepts in spiritual fitness are not so much about religion, but just more about having awareness and compassion and connections and self-study and personal growth, and you could totally relate it to the yamas and the niyamas. So that's all going to be part of what I do at Yogaville.
Cool.
So a couple of exciting things.
That's so awesome. You hinted in the beginning that you could say more about the meaning or the source of your name of the company. So why don't you go ahead and grant us that.
So Sarasvati, named for Saraswati, the divine mother, goddess of learning and wisdom and knowledge. So did you know Pierre when he was also part of our teacher training, but I don't know if you ever came across him. He was one of the instructors, and he taught Sanskrit.
Okay. Pierre Cuvallon.
Yes. Right. So when I was brewing the idea of starting this company, I wrote him and I said, okay, I'm creating this company. It's in honor of my mother. Her name was Sarah. And this is what it's about. And within 2 minutes, he wrote me back and he said, Sarasvati, goddess of learning and wisdom and knowledge. She's a divine mother. And I said, and I wrote him back and I said, oh my God, my mother was a teacher. I mean, she was an educator, so even better. And so, you know, I played around with the spelling of it a little bit, but basically that's where it came from. So it has a nice personal story. My mom was Sarah. She's the Sarah in Sarasvati.
Awesome.
And it's in her honor. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a number of people say to me, don't start a company with a Sanskrit word. It's got to be, you know, a more mainstream word. And I said, yeah, I got to go with it.
Yeah, well, you're in good company now.
Yeah, and I always joke, you know, because I have the card right there. I'm staring at it.
Nice.
But I always joke, you know, leave it to an advertising person to come up with a name that nobody can say or spell. So in the back of my card, you know, I do what Fahe Yogurt does, and I have a little phonetic.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So, yeah, that's the story.
Awesome.
All right, wait, you can't leave, though, without us having at least a minute conversation about the political world, because, you had a podcast recently about navigating that world and not hating, and
yeah,
boy, it's hard, isn't it?
It is really hard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But the thing is, it's like, You can't say stuff like, you know, there's the world and it's like a drama and we are the consciousness within it, and only counts that to be true some of the time.
Right.
So you have to take into account that the other players need to be there for the whole thing to work. It's like if you went into a movie theater and you sat down and you had your popcorn and the screen opened and the two main characters were in love, and then they were in love, and that mm-hmm. was the whole movie. It would be right. so boring, right?
Right.
And for some reason, yeah. the nature of our universe is this drama. And yeah. I suspect that, you know, we are cast in the image of whatever is creating this thing. We are literally that thing. And
right.
we're so intrigued by the drama, but in order for us to be in it, to participate in it, it has to seem so real.
Right.
But when you take the time to step aside, you know, and Wendy read this quote in the last podcast from her book, you know, about you, it's impossible to really understand that from the perspective of being outside of that. I mean, it's impossible to say it, you know, what is that? And yet we are also that transcendent thing.
Right. Right.
And that's where we have to go to when things on this plane seem so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's that this is that drama part that we experience through the senses and is fleeting and is full of differences and obstacles and duality. And we have to go and also remember that we are not that. We are the transcendent of that, participating like as though we were actors in a school play, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So you do the best you can. You are an activist. You do what you can. You do what makes sense. But then you also know that you can't be attached to the results of that plane of right. being, because it's right. always going to be out of your control.
Right.
It's a grand dance on a cosmic level.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's so hard not to be sucked into every moment of it. And you have to. And that, again, being out in the African safari was just, you know, such a great way to get away from it for a while and realize, oh, my God, the world and the universe is so much bigger than this and that,
yeah.
you know.
Jane, I had it so strongly when I was in Finland this summer to be mm-hmm. in a culture where the focus is not on business, but on individuals. Like, individual rights is so important there. And they have business out the wazoo. I mean, they're totally a capitalist society. But
yeah.
all of their laws and all of their rules and all of their expectations are about taking care of the individuals within this yeah. society.
Right, right.
And it just gives you such a different perspective.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I try to force myself to think the other way, like to try to put myself in that person's mind and say, okay, yeah, I think that it's okay to do this, and it's okay to separate families, and it's okay. Like, how can any, and I can't do it. It's like I
right.
try so hard, and I was like, I just can't do it. It's just wrong. It just feels so wrong, and things that are clearly so right and wrong aren't so clearly right and wrong. You know,
yeah.
You know, and it's just such a strange time. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a strange time. And it's, yeah. you know, partly that the stream of information is so manipulated that
yeah.
we get different stories and
right.
we're told different reasons for things. And
right.
so it makes it possible, it makes it feasible to set up as enemy. And when once you tap into this fear place, you know,
right.
fear is such a motivator that when we're put in a place where there's fear, then it makes it me versus you, and it's a survival issue.
Right, right.
So, you know, and from that, it's really hard to tell any kind of rational tale.
Yeah, yeah. That's where we have to keep spreading the good stuff. But
yes, keep spreading it. Well, it's been so good to talk with you.
It's been great to talk to you and to see you.
I know, yeah.
yeah.
And we will, I'll post a link to your website.
Okay.
And then people can find out about the upcoming programs that you have if they're in the area or if you happen to go to some other area.
Sure.
Like out to Yogaville.
Right, right,
yeah.
absolutely. Yeah.
Very cool.
Thank you.
All right. Well, hopefully I don't get to Maryland myself so much anymore. So,
Yeah, so you don't come visit as much. Well, I'll have to try to get up to Ishta when I'm visiting family.
yeah.
And some of us Ishta folks were brewing the idea of trying to get you and Wendy down here now to talk, since she's got a book to promote, and maybe we can get them.
Absolutely. Sounds like a great idea.
Okay.
All
All
right,
right.
Jane, be
Thank you.
well.
Be
All right,
well. Namaste.
namaste.
Bye.
Alan Finger, Sarah Finger, and I are leading a meditation training at Ishta Yoga in December. You can get all the details at ishtayoga.com, or you can head over to my website, peterfurco.com, for a link there. And I'll put one in the show notes to boot. You can also catch me at weekly classes at Ishta or at Floating Lotus in Midtown Manhattan. But Floating Lotus is a cool joint that's got yoga classes and lots of other spa treatments, including flotation tanks, which Wendy and I got to do together this week. It was a blast. So check that out. Check out the details of my schedule at peterfurco.com. Thanks for listening. Namaste.